They'll look at new legislation to combat sexual assault on college campuses, introduced today by a bipartisan group of senators. The law would require schools to take anonymous survey results on campus assaults and share them with the public. It would also put a financial burden on schools that don't comply with some of the new requirements.
Aaron Bezuvis is with us to talk about the legislation called the Campus Accountability and Safety Act. She's a professor at Western New England University School of Law and director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Studies. Aaron, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So what would the Campus Accountability and Safety Act do? What would it change if it were passed?
Yeah, well, the proposed new legislation has a number of provisions that seem to be aimed at strengthening prevention and campus response to sexual assault that occurs. And then it has another set of provisions that seem to be aimed at, as you already mentioned, holding schools accountable in terms of exacting a penalty from schools who don't comply. So in that first category, the provisions that are aimed at prevention and response, a provision requires a nationwide survey to help get a handle on the scope of the problem of sexual violence. Another example is a requirement that campus provide specially trained personnel to deal with the issue of campus assault. A requirement that they provide special advisors to victims to help coordinate the kind of support they need, including whether that might be educational accommodations or like serve as a liaison with campus authorities or local law enforcement. There's a prohibition in the bill that would ban colleges from punishing students who report sexual violence in good faith, and that's a provision that seems to me aimed at the problem of underreporting, because oftentimes victims fear, especially if there has been mutual underage drinking, that reporting sexual assault under that environment could blow back on them. Other requirements, colleges and universities couldn't, under this new law, have separate campus disciplinary procedures for certain subunits or subgroups on campus. For example, an athletic department that might want to handle internally an issue of sexual violence that occurs in a way that differs from the rest of campus, that would be prohibited.
Now, this this bill had a bipartisan support, quite a lot of it, which can be a rarity these days. Can you put into context for us why that is and why this has emerged as such a pressing issue?
I'm not surprised that it has bipartisan support for as you say, it has really become an issue in the last couple of years that has taken on a large scale public focus, and I think that's definitely due to a lot of the recent reporting about the widespread nature of the problem. The government has released recent reports, the White House Task Force report, for example, as well as other policy statements by the Office for Civil Rights that have talked about such statistics as the number one in five women are believed to be victims of sexual assault while in college, and even 3% of men have reported experiencing sexual violence while in college. So I think that the nature of the problem, as illustrated by statistics like that, has really put this issue on the map. But in addition to that, it's also come to light recently the degree to which schools in the past have tried to suppress the exposure of instances of sexual assault that have occurred on their campus, and that's something that has been the subject of lots of recent government investigations that have received a lot of press, and so I think that's also motivating the bipartisan support.
Now, you mentioned the number one in five women on a college campus have been sexually assaulted, according to a new study, but there's still the concern out there that even this number could be an underreported number. Why do we think that now?
Just to put that one in five number in an even scarier context, in 2000, the Department of Justice estimated that less than 5% of victims who are attending college actually report sexual violence to college officials. Wow. So that could be the tip of the iceberg, that one in five number, and that's definitely a scary thought. Now, hopefully since 2000, especially in light of the recent attention paid to universities making a renewed commitment to addressing sexual assault, it has helped curb the problem of underreporting by making students feel like their concerns will be taken seriously if they do report. But in the past, that's definitely been a problem. There has been very little incentive to report if you felt like there was not going to be a fair process, that colleges and universities weren't motivated to actually expel or otherwise discipline a student who's found responsible for sexual violence, probably out of concern for either litigation by a student who was found responsible, or concern for the negative publicity, or concern for the lost tuition that would result from expelling a student for sexual assault. So all of those things sort of stacked up on the side of schools not wanting to, not really having an incentive to take sexual assault seriously. And up until this recent wave of Title IX enforcement, there's been very little legal action on the other side that provides a sort of counterbalance that would make schools equally interested in taking their responsibility to address sexual assault seriously.
Now, to look at one aspect of this proposed legislation, penalties that could be levied against universities that aren't compliant with the new law, they could lose up to 1% of their operating budget. Now, as I understand, there are already penalties on the books. Why isn't that working?
Right. I think that that's actually the most important thing in this new proposed legislation, because the Department of Education, in terms of enforcing Title IX, has really been somewhat hamstrung by the only available penalty that it has at its disposal, and that's the penalty to withdraw all federal funding. And that has really turned out to be a penalty that's too big to use. Because what that would result in is, not only, grants for research and things like that that might be federally supported, but also all federal financial aid to students would be terminated at that point. And the Department of Education realizes that if they ever took that step, they would be punishing the very students whose civil rights they are, supposed to protect. So it hasn't ever really been able to leverage that particular penalty, which means that it's kind of enforcement has been relatively toothless, at least in terms of motivating proactive compliance. All a university, a cynical university might say, well, why would we proactively comply with Title IX? Because the worst thing that would happen is that someone could file a complaint, Department of Education would show up, they would investigate us, they would find that we had a violation, and then at that point they would make us promise to fix it and comply going forward. Well, okay, that doesn't really motivate proactive compliance when the worst case scenario is a promise to comply going forward. Under this new proposed legislation, should it pass, the threat would be an actual financial penalty that I think is it's small enough that we could see it feasibly being used by the Department of Education, but large enough that it would actually motivate compliance.
We're talking right now with Aaron Bezuvis about a new bipartisan measure unveiled today aimed at trying to curb campus sexual assault. We're continuing our conversation with Aaron Bezuvis about the newly introduced Campus Accountability and Safety Act.
The bill was unveiled earlier today by a bipartisan group of U.S. senators. It aims to hold universities and colleges more accountable for sexual assaults that occur on their campuses. We want to hear from you about this issue at 800-642-1234. Do you think that institutions of higher education need to be a bigger part of the solution to sexual assault on campus? From what you've heard of this law, do you think this is the right direction to go? Do you think Congress needs to hold universities' feet to the fire on this issue? What would you like to see them do? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email talk@WPR.org.
We're going to go right to the phones and take Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Hello. I just had a question about kind of the role of the police departments, and if the guests could clarify kind of where the boundary lines are between university and the police, because it seems like sexual assault to me is a very serious crime and it should be handled through the police department. So it seems to me if they're having problems with this, it's because the police aren't investigating. And is there a difference between campus police and regular police? So it seems kind of odd to me that they would have a university, an academic institution, be investigating sexual crime. Seems like an odd role to place on a university. So if you could clarify for that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Matt. And Matt, getting at what a lot of critics have voiced, that there is too much jurisdiction going on by the universities here themselves, handling it themselves, and not enough accountability. But why do you think it is arranged the way it is right now, Aaron?
Right. Well, it's not... I want to put out there that it's not an either-or proposition. It's not as if campus sexual assault can only either be a criminal matter or a matter of university discipline. It's actually always already both. The problem is that it winds up that university discipline is really the only mechanism for effectively dealing with campus assault, because the burden of proof on prosecutors is awfully high, appropriately so in criminal matters when you're talking about somebody's liberty being at stake in the form of criminal penalties. It's really difficult to prove all manners of sexual violence, but especially campus sexual violence, to the kind of beyond a reasonable doubt level that would be required to actually win a case in court. So prosecutors, and not just campus assault, but rape in general, is not an issue that gets very much criminal prosecution. So by default, even though I said both of those things are active, by default that kind of leaves campus assault as the what appears to be to the public as the only way that campus assault is being handled. I guess to address Matt's other question about isn't this, do we really want universities handling severe crimes? Well, I mean, let me take it out of the context of a sexual assault for a second, just to maybe try to make a point in a different way. If one of my students knifed another of my students, I would hope that we would expel that student. Right? I mean, there would be very little controversy, I think, if a university disciplinary proceeding occurred and if that student was found responsible for a physical assault, that for the sake of safety of every other student, that student who committed that act of violence would be expelled. And it's not very common that one student knifes another student, but when it does happen, when other forms of assault do happen on campus, of course universities deal with it in a disciplinary procedure, because they are trying to protect their other students. So what this bill and other aspects of Title IX enforcement aimed at sexual assault are actually trying to do is to make sure that sexual assault is also being taken seriously by university disciplinary proceedings. It's not singling out sexual assault as the only thing, the only conduct that could also be considered criminal that universities are taking seriously. But the idea is, if you've got to keep your students safe, and you've got to respect their civil rights. And so part of that is taking the same care that you would in investigating and disciplining a student who rapes another student as you would a student who commits any other kind of crime or harm against another student.
Well, thank you so much for that call. We're going to go next to Kate in Green Bay. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to say that I completely agree with everything that was just said. I think that campuses should have greater involvement with the punishment and follow-through for any sexual assault cases on campus. I know that as a woman, and I went to a public college, it's definitely something that you experience, that's thought about, and it's in our culture now. I mean, there are articles and magazines, even such things like Cosmo warning women about campus sexual assault. And I mean, I will be a mother someday. That's something that I will definitely consider if I have a daughter, that I want to know that the campus that she's going to fully complies with the safety regulations, with the follow through of the punishment, that's an upstanding institution, that the campus is known for that. And I think that they should be held accountable to these punishments and the fines that they say they're going to pay that's being enforced right now. I think that that's something, unfortunately, that our culture has come to that point that we need to be bringing these things up, and we need to come down harder on these issues, and campuses should be fully involved with them.
All right. Thank you so much, Kate. And what do you say to that, Aaron?
Well, Kate's comment actually reminds me of another part of this proposed law that addresses the issue of transparency. that I think could make it much easier for students and their parents in the future to be able to make decisions about which campus environment is going to be right for them. Part of the proposed new legislation would require the Department of Education to make public the names of all institutions that are being investigated for violations of Title IX, as well as the kinds of responses that universities that are found non-compliant are going to have to take in order to come into compliance. So, I think that gives a little bit more information to the average consumer, if you will, about how different schools are addressing the scope of the problem at different schools and how it's being handled.
And also, in terms of transparency, aren't schools also now, according to this bill, supposed to conduct a survey about who reports it and then post it online so parents and students can check it out?
Yeah, that's another part of it. And a related law, the Clery Act, also speaks to that very issue of transparency. That's a statute that's been on the books for a while that has required schools to report crime statistics of all kinds. And last year, the Clery Act was amended to require not only reporting of crime statistics, including, of course, offenses of sexual violence, but also to make public the ways in which schools are acting to prevent and respond to sexual violence. So that, too, is going to add to the kind of information that consumers are going to have available to them in order to, through the marketplace, if you will, hold schools responsible for their, for problems or lack of problems regarding sexual assault.
As we mentioned, there are other laws on the books that have been geared toward preventing and sexual assault and holding colleges accountable. What is there in this bill to provide a little more teeth, a little more enforcement to make sure that this new law goes enforced and observed?
Right. Well, a lot of the provisions of this law are actually really familiar to people who've been following along the requirements that the Department of Education has made in the context of its 2011 Dear Colleague letter, which puts a lot of specific requirements on schools in terms of how they respond and prevent sexual assault. A recent White House task force report that was published last May was another source of recommendations that are kind of echoed in this proposed new legislation. But what this new statute would do, if it were passed, would be to take some of these requirements that exist in, for example, the recommendations of the task force, turn something that's a recommendation into something that's a requirement. And then as it would affect the kinds of requirements that are in the Dear Colleague letter, it would amplify them so that they would not just be requirements of a federal agency, but actually requirements of Congress, which would make them more potentially more permanent. Because, frankly, as useful as the Dear Colleague letter is in terms of specifying more clearly the legal requirements under Title IX on colleges and universities for dealing with this issue, under the next presidential administration, a new Secretary of Education could revoke that letter tomorrow. I mean, not tomorrow, but, revoke that letter, summarily without having to go through any kind of process. But if statutory requirements are passed, it takes a great deal more effort to amend or repeal legislation. So I think that's why, even though a lot of these requirements are already existing, either in terms of the Dear Colleague letter's requirements or recommendations from the task force, this would make them mandatory and would make them more permanent.
Now, we talked about some of the statistics earlier on. 1 in 5 women reported being sexually assaulted in college, for instance, is one that's out there right now. Should this law pass, do you see this making a difference in how safe women feel in college?
Well, I think it would. I think it would make a difference. I think it's a difference that's measured against what is already happening, which is schools are already starting to take more responsibility for this issue, and that's a good thing, and that's a result of the increased enforcement under Title IX, the Dear Colleague letter, the White House task force report, and things like that. So I think part of what this new legislation would do is to make sure that there's no backsliding on that. Like I said before, to make sure that if there's a change in administration and the Dear Colleague letter goes away, that there would still be a source of legal requirements so that schools wouldn't be able to go back to the old days. So, you know, that and the enforcement provision that I mentioned earlier, the fact that schools would have even more motivation to avoid that penalty that could amount to 1% of their operating budgets, that too will keep them honest. And I think that that will help to ensure that the positive changes that I think we're already seeing are lasting.
Erin, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Erin Bezuvis, professor at Western New England University School of Law and director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Studies.